The instructions today are on the second foundation of mindfulness of feelings, and also the third foundation of mindfulness or awareness, mindfulness of mind states, or mindfulness of the citta, mindfulness of the thoughts. So essentially we're trying to do a whole lot in a short space of time. So this is the fast track in terms of meditation instruction. So I want to begin with mindfulness of the feeling world. Now, what is meant by this is a very specific thing. The way that the word feeling is used is not quite even the ordinary use of the word feeling in English. The Pali word is vedana, and what it actually means is the initial feeling tone of every experience. So the initial response or feeling tone to every sight, every sound, every smell, every taste, every touch, and even every thought. Now, when I first heard that, I thought, what does that mean? And it took me actually years to understand it. So, in order that you get an idea of what I mean, we're going to do some little exercises. So, in a moment, I'm going to ask you just to sit very still and quietly. Then I'm going to say a couple of words, and I'm going to ask you to see what the feeling tone of your experience is and what happens in the body. So what sensations you experience in the body, and whether there's a feeling of liking or disliking or somewhere in between. So feelings are either pleasant, the vedana is pleasant or unpleasant, or somewhere in between. Sometimes people say that somewhere in between is actually neutral, so there are some things that we don't have much of a reaction to. But there are some things that just grab us in the feeling world. So, if you would please, just sit, just for 1 minute. So sitting very still, being open and receptive. Chocolate. Have a sensation in the body in response to the word chocolate? Pleasant or unpleasant? Yes? Was it pleasant or unpleasant? Okay. And what thoughts came in relationship to that experience? Yes. Okay. So we have the feeling and we have the initial response, and then we have thoughts in relationship to it. Anybody else? Yes.
I felt only my head, not my body, just away from it, only my head.
Okay. How would you describe it? Pleasant or unpleasant? Okay. So maybe in between. Somebody else. Yes? As if you want to eat chocolate?
Yes.
Yeah. So this desire for chocolate is palpable. It's pleasant. Okay? Anybody else? Yes?
I like chocolate very much, and I felt very bad, and I want to throw out. I wanted to throw out.
Okay. So you like it a lot, and then you felt bad for liking it?
No, I usually like it.
Oh.
Now, immediately, I felt unpleasant, I wanted to throw out.
Okay. So you had some aversion to it now. Okay. So you see how quickly, just from one word, we have a whole story about whether we like chocolate, whether it's good for us, whether we should eat it, whether we should not eat it, whether we need to be more healthy, and so on. So very quickly, yes?
I have a question, because when you said chocolate the first time, I tried to feel something and I didn't feel it. And then I said, okay, I said again to myself the word chocolate, and I tried to feel something about it, and then then I felt my mouth, but I feel that there is, it's also an interpretation. There is a short nothing between the word chocolate.
Okay. Yes, I do.
I can feel something, and then if I think about it, I can feel bad about it or good about it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So what she said was that there's the initial response, and then maybe some kind of gap, and then some interpretation of that experience. So we have the feeling of pleasant or unpleasant, and then the mind moves to interpret and analyze and think about and add to the experience. So there's contact through the sense doors, there's feeling, pleasant or unpleasant, and from the feeling and dependent upon it arises desire. The desire for the chocolate or the desire not to have the chocolate. And then dependent upon the desire is the next movement of mind, if we look really carefully, is the clinging and craving. You see, so the craving and the clinging are kind of bound up together. When we really, really want something, whether it's chocolate, I'm just using that as an example, or something else in the world, the mind clings and fixes to it. And this movement of mind, this process that goes on relentlessly, actually, almost over and over again, needs to be seen in our daily life. So whenever somebody, I'm sitting at the front here speaking, you will be having feelings and thoughts about, there'll be responses. Some people will like what I'm doing, others will not like it, and so on. There'll, this whole movement and process and way of relating to the world occurs just as we're walking around, as we're sitting here. And we need to really see into it and see what's happening, because we have and develop our own patterns and tendencies and ways of relating to the world. And this, these four or five things, the contact, which is the initial experience of the sense doors, the response through the feeling world, and then the mind that desires and clings, is really part of what's called in the Dharma teachings dependent arising. So it's how things arise, how we get caught in the unfolding nature of the world. Now, it's not that this process needs to be deleted or stopped in any way, but it's to be steady in the face of our feeling world, so that we're not necessarily compelled to those things we like, or attracted to those things we like, or repelled from the things we don't like. Because the things we like, we move towards, whether it's somebody or something, an object we like, a feeling we like. And the things we don't like, we tend to push away. And then there's a whole range of things that we don't have much response to. And if that's our tendency, we can be a little cut off or disassociated or shut down in terms of our response to the world. So we need to really look and see what's actually happening for me. What's the relationship in my life of the feeling world and the thoughts? So let's just do one more experiment, if you would please, just sitting. Mother, in response to the word mother. Yes?
At the beginning that was confusing because she asked me too many questions, so sometimes it's bothering me. But when I continued to think, it was pleasant because she taking care about me and she wanted the good for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pleasant.
Okay.
Thank
you. So a pleasant response. Initially some slight unpleasantness associated with being asked a lot of questions, and then the realization that my mother took care of me.
Yes.
And wanted the best for me.
Yes.
So pleasant, loving response. Anybody else? Yes? Okay, so joy in the beginning, I saw you laugh, and warmth. Yes? No? Okay.
I felt my heart beating, and I felt the lungs,
yes.
And then the back. And I felt my body being warm, and then I moved to the thinking about the word mother, and first there was my relationship with my mother, which are conflictual, but it's based on love, but still sometimes not understanding. And then there was a shift, and I was a bit surprised about me going to be a mother.
Ah.
I was a bit okay. And then I even thought about mother, like my grandmother that passed away was a mother, and suddenly I was, it was interesting, and I felt my body very energetic thinking about it.
Okay, if I can just say it so that other people can hear. First of all, she felt her heart beating and warmth in the body going through to the back. And then the next part was?
I felt I was being energetic and first thinking about my mother and my relationship
yes.
with her, which had
two aspects.
Yeah, and
okay.
in between the not pleasant or conflictual relationship
yes.
with the different points of views, and the other, which is pleasant, which is love. And
okay.
they apparently exist in the same time.
Yes,
and
so the pleasant and unpleasant existing at the same time in relationship to your
to
mother.
My mother. And then I was thinking about
being
my,
a mother.
Myself being a mother. And then I thought about mother.
Yes.
Well, there's many mothers and many motherhoods. And, and then the
body. Okay. So then the relationship went to the role of mother, being a mother, and then more generally about grandmothers and mothers in general. So you're
thinking about
yeah.
Mother Earth. There are all kinds of versions
yeah.
to the word.
Yes. And so then it went on to Mother Earth. So you see, just from one word, there's a whole emotional response that takes place. And this is how we relate and respond to the world and to each other. And it really needs to be seen and caught. Because sometimes we get swept along. We get caught up in the story of our own life. And that needs to be seen into. There'll be some words like that that, you know, I really don't have a whole lot of meaning or effect for us. But there'll be certainly some triggers and, of course, some experiences. So being in touch with our feeling and emotional world and seeing and recognizing what's happening is essential in terms of the Dharma practice. So now that I've given you a little bit of an idea, thanks to some help from all of you, what our responses are to our feeling world, just to a couple of different words, chocolate and mother, I want to go on and talk a little bit more about the heart-mind and how we might bring mindfulness to the citta. The heart-mind actually means not just the heart and not just the head, but the totality of the heart and mind. So our exploration is actually to allow the mind, to use the mind to reflect upon itself. And our thoughts, as we've just seen a few moments ago, act as fuel for our emotions. Our thoughts embellish, our thoughts add to the initial perceptions and feelings, and with that, our emotions are constructed. For example, I was walking down a street in India late one night. I was going home after the meditation practice, and it was one of those narrow alleyways with walls on either side, and my hotel was right at the end, some 200 meters down the lane. And as I walked, I heard behind me the sound of a pack of dogs barking, getting closer and closer. So, there's the sound that reaches my ears, the dogs barking. There's my initial feeling response, which is an unpleasant feeling. But then, of course, and there's a feeling in the pit of the stomach, that sensation that accompanies fear. because the dogs are getting closer and closer to my heels and they're all barking and barking. And so then the next thoughts, you see, started to get a bit catastrophic and dramatic. And so the thought pattern went something like, oh, the dogs are going to bite me. And then it went, oh, and dogs in India have rabies. And then it went, oh, I'm going to die, and oh, I'm never going to see my children again. And so there's how you go from just the unpleasant feeling and sound through to some drama and catastrophe that hasn't even happened. And so fear is constructed in that way. So we add to the events that are happening with the thoughts. The instructions in the Satipatthana Sutta, this great sutta on mindfulness by the Buddha, are to be mindful to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness. One abides independent, not clinging anywhere. So we're not being asked to be totally mindful every second of the day, because I think that's an impossible task. I don't know anyone who's totally mindful. But we're being asked to be mindful enough to notice what's actually going on. And we're also being invited not to cling anywhere. So to be mindful of the thought process, to be mindful of that construction of fear, but not to cling anywhere. And we will each have some very habitual pathways and mechanisms of mind that occur. For some of us, it will be fear and anxiety as an emotion that arises. For others, it will be anger. For others, it will be clinging to views, especially the view I'm right and everyone else is wrong. So we need to see into our own patterns and habits in terms of what actually is happening in our daily life. What's happening as we live in this world? What is it to live a really conscious life? So in order to practice mindfulness of the citta, mindfulness of mind states, it's important just to begin by sitting quietly, being open and receptive, and then sitting with the attitude that all is welcome. So sitting with a receptivity and openness and unconditional friendliness to all that occurs in the mind, so to all thoughts that arise. That's the first step. It's also to notice any sensations in the body that are related to this. So simply be aware of the state of mind. Just aware of how it is today. Because the mind can be focused, it can be clear, it can be cloudy. It can be dull, it can be flighty. There's many different experiences in relation to the condition of the mind. And so part of our practice is just to check in. Oh, how's my mind today? So you're using your awareness to reflect upon the mind itself and check out what's going on. How am I today? And our practice is also just to witness those states of mind arising, staying in consciousness, and then just passing. Because like anything else, they arise and cease. sometimes we'll notice that we are observing the mind, we can do that, and other times we're just totally lost in thought. And then we come back, we notice, oh, I've been thinking for the last 10 minutes. There are a number of what we call dualities of mind. And the first of the dualities is a mind that's caught in wanting, or a mind that's caught in greed. So you might check, is your mind caught up pursuing things today? Are you sitting with wanting mind? Is there something you really, really want right now, and are you caught in that? So notice if there's wanting or greed or desire present, and also notice if there's the absence of desire and wanting and greed. The second of the dualities is mind that's caught up in negativities, or mind that's caught up in ill will or hatred, and mind that is not. So sometimes we are swept away with our own fault finding. We either find fault on the inside, or we look outwardly and we blame others and are critical and find fault. So see whether your mind today is caught up in doing that. Or simply see whether there's the absence of any negativity or ill will. So just checking, oh, am I negative today? Am I being critical today? Or not? And of course, if we're being critical, our tendency is to push things away, to avoid. The third of the dualities of mind is delusion or confusion. And when the mind is caught in delusion, it's difficult to see because we're so deluded we don't quite know about it. There's not the clarity of mind to see. But when the mind's caught in delusion, what generally happens is the thoughts are quite circular. We keep on going in a loop. We go round and round and round with the same things. So we might be thinking about something and then just get caught in the same kind of cycle. This is confusion or delusion. So you'll notice that the mind is sometimes confused, or the mind might be really clear. There might be the absence of confusion. So that's just another thing. Oh, how am I today? Am I confused? Is there the presence or absence of confusion? And the other dualities of mind, I'll just quickly name. There's mind that's contracted or suppressed, and mind that's not. Mind that is distracted or not. Mind that's in samadhi, so mind that's focused, mind that's unified, and mind that isn't. There's mind that's exalted or high or elevated, or mind that isn't. And finally, there's mind that is free, or mind that is bound. So when we begin to look at our thoughts, we also realize that there's three fields of time. Sometimes the mind goes past, and that's often bound up with regretting. Or the mind might be caught up in the present, and we might be evaluating or commenting or comparing or judging. Or we might have a lot of thoughts where the mind's going to the future, where we're planning, where we're fantasizing, where we're worrying. So see what the mind is doing, whether it's bound in the past, caught up in the present, or leaning towards the future. See which of the fields of time the mind is resting and landing in. So in the Dharma world, there's a particular way of working with our feelings and emotions. And it's really simple, and it's quite powerful when you learn how to do it. So it's simply to be directly with the bodily sensation that's associated with the emotion. So if it's fear, for example, see where the sensation of fear rests in the body. It might be like a knot in the pit of the stomach. It might be here. It might be fear about speaking, so we might have a lot of sensations here. It'll be different, but see where the sensation is. Bring very gentle, tender attention to the sensations, as if we would cradle the sensation itself. Keep that attention steady. And then watch what happens to the shifting, changing nature of the sensations. They will shift and change. And then also watch what thoughts arise and emerge in relationship to the sensation. And then what happens is quite remarkable. There can often be quite an insight into what's happening, an insight into the relationship that you have with your fear or anger or whatever emotion that you're working with. So the sorts of thoughts that might come are usually quite strong or little one-line beliefs that we have about ourselves. For example, the thought that affects the mind might be, I'm not good enough. Or it might be, I can't cope. Or it might be, I'm inadequate. Or it might be the opposite of that. It might be, I'm right. I'm really capable and I can do it better. The mind might also land in thoughts of, well, I don't know. Or thoughts of, I know. So we just need to see what's happening. See what thoughts and beliefs keep our suffering in place. See what drives us in our life. And the way to see it is just to sit and observe and watch and take note of what arises for you. So it's an exploration, it's an inquiry. Now, for some of you, this will all sound incredibly confusing, and that's okay. That's just the third duality of mind. If at any time in the practice you just want to stop working with the feelings and emotions and come back to the breath, absolutely fine. So let me go through it again. To work with feelings and emotions, you just sit and check in on the sensation level in the body. You see what's happening. You check the condition of the mind. Oh, how's my mind state today? If there's any strong emotion present, you see where it is and you begin to work with it by bringing gentle, loving attention to it. And then watch the unfolding pattern that emerges. Notice how we tend to have a particular attitude to thought. We claim thoughts as ours. We say, this is me, this is mine, this is who I am. The invitation is not to cling to any thought, not to identify with the thought as me and mine, but simply to see it as thought that arises, stays, and passes. That's all. And we need to recognize that some thoughts lead to pain and sorrow and suffering and anguish, and some thoughts lead to liberation and awakening. There's also something I would finally like to mention about working with the mind. And that is that sometimes as we sit, we can turn our attention to the immeasurable mind, the mind that knows no limit. And when we turn our attention to the mind that is immeasurable, we recognize love. Love emerges. Love moves through the whole body, feeling, and mind. So, if when we're sitting, we have a sense of the immeasurable mind, please feel free just to sit and be with that. Sitting in the natural radiance of the heart mind that's free. It's quite naturally unproblematic. The mind that's not caught up anywhere, the mind of non-clinging, is naturally very luminous and free. And sometimes we just feel that for a moment. Sometimes when we forget ourselves, or when we just see, just hear, just smell, just taste, just touch, without all of the additions, when we just have the very non-dual response to the sensory world, this whole cycle of craving and clinging and becoming is seen into and cut through. And then mind is not a problem. There is no problem anywhere. Are there any questions? Yes. Lila, would you like to come up the front so and talk into the microphone because it's hard to hear?
אז יש לפעמים סיטואציות שאני מבינה הרבה מה שהיא אומרת, ולמדתי הרבה מה שיהודה אומר. אבל מה שבעיה, שקורה סיטואציה, אז אני שוכחת פתאום הכל, ואיך להתמודד בסיטואציה.
Okay. She said that she understands many things that you are saying, but there are and she can practice it until there is a situation when she forgets everything that you are saying. So she wants to know how to deal with it in these kind of situations.
Okay. So the question is, stay here.
Okay.
It's a great question. It was that she understands what I just said, except when she's dealing with a situation and then she forgets everything. Okay. In what sort of situation, or what kind of situation are you referring to? Can you give us an example?
כן, בעבודה נגיד מנהלת יכולה להתנהג לא יפה בחוצפה
אליי.
Okay.
In her work, her manager can treat her not nice.
What do you usually do when your manager treats you badly?
She becomes stressed.
Mm-hmm. And then what?
The asthma. And then she wants to leave the job and go away.
Mm. Okay. So the movement of mind is something's occurring that we don't like. And the impulse is to leave the job to avoid, to go away from it. The instruction is to be with what is happening rather than run from it. So if you stay with that unpleasant feeling when your manager treats you badly, what is it you conclude about yourself, or what belief arises for you?
She tells herself that she likes the job very much, and she tries not to pay attention to her manager. But it's not what you asked.
No.
Yeah, so can you ask it again?
When your manager treats you badly, what conclusion do you make about how you are?
You want her to speak in Hebrew?
Well, then people can hear. And you can translate for me.
Yeah. She said that it's not, she doesn't feel well. It's still...
So you don't feel well, you feel bad about yourself. Do you think you are not good enough? Okay, there we go. So the belief, when someone treats us badly, the conclusion we make is, I'm not good enough. So, is that really true? No. Okay. So knowing that that is not really true, how could you respond to your manager?
אני יכולה להרגיש שזה לא באמת כך, אבל אין לה זכות לצעוק עליי או לתוס. ואז לא טוב.
ואז מה?
ואז הסיטואציה היא לא נעימה שהיא מתנהגת כך.
So when somebody is angry with us, we often make a conclusion that something is wrong with us, or we're not good enough. This is actually not the truth of things. So if we can stay steady with the truth that we know, stay steady in the face of somebody else's view and opinion about us, stay steady in the face of blame that doesn't belong with us, then we can have a different way of relating to the world. Whenever we do anything, we can be on the receiving end of praise or blame. We tend to like praise and not like blame. We don't like it when somebody finds fault, when somebody criticizes us. But then we conclude there's something wrong with us and we want to leave. So it takes some courage to really stand steady in the face of somebody else's negativity. Okay, thank you. So the way we work with the situation is to see the belief, I'm not good enough, and to see that that is simply a belief and not the truth of things. And when we see into it, it means we can loosen up our responses and have a different response. We can have a fresh situation, a fresh response to the situation at work, or whatever it is. So this is the way we work with feelings. Yes?
What happens if it's not someone else's negativity, but it's our negativity?
Ah. What happens if it's not somebody else's negativity, but it's our negativity? It's actually the same movement of mind. So, negativity either lands on the inner world or on the outer, on somebody else, and we blame. That movement of mine is the same. When we tend to criticize ourselves, there's often an unfulfilled desire. So if we notice that we're being very hard with ourselves or harsh, a really good thing to do is to stop and say, what is it I really want right now and can't have or don't have? Or another question is, what am I clinging to right now? And this whole process of being critical with oneself can be a really old story. It can be something learned as a child. We can be criticized by the mother, by the father, or by a school teacher, or somebody in our life, somebody quite significant. And although we know that, even as a child, that it's unjust and unfair, what happens is we tend to internalize that. We tend to believe, oh, there is something wrong with me. I'm really not good enough. And then we carry on our own self-criticism. So there's part of us that disapproves of how we are, and it's to really see into that, catch it as it's happening. Is there a specific example you could give of being critical to yourself?
Well, there are many.
There are many, he said.
Unfortunately. But many times you say, like, you're thinking you're not good enough. But there are times where the situation shows you you're not good enough. So it's not like someone else said it to you.
Okay. So sometimes, he said, the situation shows you you're not good enough. In what way? Maybe you should come here. Come here. So how did the situation, this situation you're talking about, show you that you're not good enough?
Well, if I forget something, or I'm doing something wrong, or something is broken, something in the reality, not that I'm imagining.
Mm. So in other words, you make a mistake.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there anybody in this room who has never made a mistake? No. If you make a mistake, what do you do?
Well, it depends. Sometimes I'm trying to make it less, or either with my mind or to try to fix it.
Mm-hmm. So other than giving yourself a hard time about making the mistake, what would be a different response? For example, if you saw that something you had done had hurt somebody else, you could apologize. You could bring awareness to that particular behavior so that you don't repeat it. But it will help you if you get to the core of the self-criticism. Where in your body does that sit?
I think in my head.
Okay. So shut your eyes right now. And bring gentle, loving attention to the sensations in your head. The sensations that are related to self-criticism. And notice any belief.
Well, like, I could see that the negative feelings are a nice part of me, because they are actually helping me.
Ah.
I could see them very simple. There is size, which is very simple, and I could see that many times I'm making it bigger, but actually it's something very, very nice and simple.
So when you really look, you see that it's quite simple and not such a problem, and that there can be some benefit from the negative thoughts in that you can change your behavior. Mm. Very good. It's really important that we don't exaggerate the thinking world and blow it out of proportion, and so that something quite small then becomes huge. So well seen. Well done.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So you've just seen a couple of examples of how to work with the emotions, how to come to the very simple belief that's holding the pain in place, and then to look at it and ask, is it really true? Is this really such a huge thing? Is it true that I'm not good enough? No, it isn't. So, today, if you wish, in the sittings, just work with any feelings and emotions. Or as you walk around, notice what the sensations are. Stay with them. If you feel overwhelmed by the feelings and emotions, then simply come back to the breath and mindfulness of breathing and use that to calm and steady the body and mind. So thank you for listening. I hope you've managed to understand something from my English. It's a very complicated set of instructions to give to people for whom English is their first language. So thank you very much for sitting so patiently and endeavoring to understand what it is I'm trying to say. Thank you. So now there's small groups and walking meditation.